voice of Westchester, 1460 WVOX.
Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX presents The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel. Provocative conversation about world issues. Now, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Hello and welcome to our program, The Advocates, on WVOX 1460 AM. My name is Richard J. Garfunkel. I am the host of this weekly forum. This program is coming live from New Rochelle, the Queen City, located on the Long Island Sound, and it can be heard live streaming on WVOX.com. One can call into WVOX at 914-636-0110. But as I say each week, please stay germane to our subject. My guest today is Michael Shapiro, former New York City prosecutor, defense lawyer, and commentator on the Supreme Court. This program is the third in a four-part summer series on the law. Recent shows have featured Guy Fairstein and Legal Services of Hudson Valley, Amy Bach, author of Ordinary Injustice. Today we'll be discussing the 5 years of the Roberts Court and its dramatic shift to the right. In late August, the Advocates will focus on the legal and tax implications of dynasty trusts on our democracy with Professor Ray Madoff of Boston College. Welcome, Michael, back to the Advocates, and thank you for joining me today.
As always, Richard, it's my pleasure to join you, especially to talk about such an interesting topic.
Thank you. You know, Mr. Michael Shapiro is a longtime Scarsdale resident, a noted criminal defense lawyer. He was raised in the Bronx, educated at City College in New York, where he received a Bachelor of Arts cum laude, and later earned his JD from New York University. Michael started his legal career as a prosecutor, serving as a special assistant attorney general in the then newly established New York State Office of Special Prosecutor for Nursing Homes and Health and Social Services. He's currently a faculty member of the Cardozo Law School's Intensive Advocacy Program, has been a frequent guest panelist at the Harvard Law School. He's now a partner with the prestigious Wall Street New York law firm Carter, Ledyard & Milburn, which was established way back in 1854. Mr. Shapiro has been a guest on The Advocates over the past few years and has brought his expertise regarding programs on the Establishment Clause, the future of conservatism, the implications of Bernard Madoff's embezzlement, and the elevation of Sonia Sotomayor to the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, as I say each week, the mission of The Advocates is to bring to the public differing views on current public policy issues. Public policy, therefore, is what we as a nation legally and traditionally follow, and we try to stress this on The Advocates. You know, in the 1930s, the Supreme Court was dominated by a conservative block of justices. It was variously characterized by many as the Nine Old Men, the conservative wing whose supporters almost unilaterally supported the rights of property ownership and were universally against the expansion of government, were dominated by justices nicknamed the Four Horsemen, Van Devanter, Butler, McReynolds, Sutherland. The so-called swing voter on the court was Justice Owen Roberts, and today the court is chaired by its, one of the most conservative justices, John Roberts, is John Roberts Court. Michael, please tell us what happened to the power of this block, and could you elaborate on the episode known as the switch in time saved nine?
Well, Richard, as a Roosevelt and New Deal scholar, as you know, and I'm sure many of your listeners know, for the first few years of President Roosevelt's first administration, from 1933 to 1937, the Congress passed legislation to save the nation from the Great Depression. And almost without fail, the Supreme Court of the time, headed by, as you described them, the Four Horsemen, four extremely conservative justices, struck down time and time again New Deal legislation that had been enacted by huge congressional majorities to save the economy, to save the nation. They didn't care. They believed, as they wrote in their opinions, that they were upholding the right of free enterprise, the right of individuals to contract what was then known as substantive due process. The idea that you couldn't have minimum wage legislation, for example, because that interfered with a worker's right to enter into a contract with a corporation on mutually agreeable grounds, as if that were they were on equal footing. Some assembly line worker at Ford was on an equal footing with the Ford Corporation at that time. So they struck down this legislation. Roosevelt and his advisors came up with a plan, and the plan was. They discussed many possibilities: amending the Constitution, passing legislation to limit what the court could hear and decide. But they came up with a plan that would increase the size of the Supreme Court, add new justices to, in effect, water down the influence of the four horsemen who, during this period of time, were joined by Owen Roberts, Justice Roberts, who himself was a conservative individual. He was a lawyer from Philadelphia, from the main line, whose interests had almost always been aligned with corporations and big business. And this legislation was pending in Congress. It looked like it was going to pass. It was the talk of the nation. It was on the front page of all the newspapers. It was on the editorial pages. That was the talk of the day in the early part of 1937 as to whether or not Roosevelt's court packing plan was going to pass Congress. And lo and behold, while it was being considered, the Supreme Court decided a case entitled West Coast Hotel against Parrish. And in that case, the Supreme Court, by a 5-4 majority, for the first time, upheld a minimum wage law. In this case, it was the minimum wage law of the state of Washington. And Justice Roberts joined with the judges who were considered the liberals in those days, Chief Justice Charles Evans Hughes, Louis Brandeis, who was the senior justice at the time, Benjamin Cardoza, and Harlan Fisk Stone. And it is considered by many historians that that decision, that case, and then the cases that followed thereafter, is what resulted in the court packing plan never being voted on by Congress, being withdrawn because the Supreme Court had a shift. It was a massive shift in the direction in which it had previously been headed, and they then started to uphold congressional enactments that were part of the New Deal.
You know, that's perfectly articulated, Michael. You know, today the court is made up of four of the six most conservative justices since 1937. Statistically, these four, call them the new four horsemen, Roberts, Scalia, Alito, and Thomas, have voted on the right between 71% and 82% of the time. In comparison, the so-called four horsemen of the early New Deal days voted conservative between 48% and 52% of the time. Actually, these individuals are voting 50% more conservative. Of course, times and issues have changed since the 1930s. The question for me and our audience is, are these judges out of the mainstream of American thinking, or are they representing or directing a philosophical shift in American thinking, Michael?
Oh, Richard, I don't think that there's any question but that the current Supreme Court and the conservatives on it are replicating what occurred in the 1930s now in the second decade of the 2000s. What you had in 19 32, and then when he took office in 1933, is you had a sea change. The country was in the depths of a depression. It was clear that Herbert Hoover had no way of extracting us from it, and the country, by a landslide, elected Franklin Roosevelt, and then, of course, in 1936, by an even greater landslide, re-elected Roosevelt. You saw a similar thing occur 2 years ago with the election of Barack Obama. Clearly, the country knew what it was doing. They knew that they were electing a new, young, liberal, for the first time ever, African-American president to lead the country out of the worst recession since the Great Depression. And they elected a overwhelmingly Democratic Congress to work with President Obama. And yet you have a Supreme Court that, as you have correctly pointed out, is the most conservative since the 1930s and in many ways more conservative. So you have a Supreme Court that is bucking the tide. Yeah. It is trying to hold back the tide that the electorate said they wanted when they elected Obama and the Democrats in 2008.
You know, they're fighting history, it seems to be. You know, Michael, the steady drumbeat of the right when it comes to the Supreme Court is that they profess to detest what they described as activist judges. They consistently invoke John Roberts' confirmation hearing metaphor of the judge as an umpire, simply calling balls and strikes. Let's talk about this last Supreme Court term and examine whether that metaphor holds up, and if not, which wing of the court has become the activist. You know, with that in mind, what was probably the most important case of the term was Citizens United against the Federal Election Commission. What was that case about?
Well, that case, you're right. It was not only the most, probably the most important court case of last term of the Supreme Court, but the most important case for many, many years. And most people, a lot of people, haven't heard of it and are not sure what it's about. In a nutshell, what it's about, the facts of the case involved a movie called Hillary the Movie that was produced by a right-wing organization during the presidential campaign, during the primaries, when Hillary Clinton was running to try to get the Democratic nomination. And this movie was a rabidly anti-Hillary Clinton movie, and I believe they wanted to show this movie, run it on television, have it on cable. I think in Minnesota, and the Federal Election Commission and the McCain-Feingold law said that in the 30 days. Prior to an election, including primaries, you couldn't have this kind of material on the public airwaves if it was paid for by corporations or other private interests. And a lawsuit was brought saying, "Oh no, this is violating." The rights of the political action committee that paid for the movie, they have a right of free speech, the same right that you and I have to stand on the corner and advocate our position. They say they have that right as well, despite the fact that they're a corporation. And the case eventually got to the Supreme Court, and the five conservative members of the Supreme Court, Alito, Roberts, Scalia, Thomas, joined by Justice Kennedy, said that the portion of the McCain-Feingold law that prohibited showing Hillary the movie in the 30 days before the election was unconstitutional. But They went further, although no one asked them to. No one raised the issue. They took it upon themselves, essentially, to say that the entire structure of the McCain-Feingold law that limited the amount of money that corporations and unions could spend in political campaigns was in violation of the First Amendment. And they declared the entire law unconstitutional, giving corporations the right to spend unlimited amounts of money in support of political positions and political candidates. And in doing so, in order to do that, they had to overturn their own precedents for the last 100 years, including a line of cases most recently upholding McCain-Feingold from the time it was passed until this case. They had always upheld it, and they reached out, although no one asked them to declare the law unconstitutional and put corporations, as they phrased it, on an equal footing with individuals, which, of course, is ridiculous.
Like
those because same. General Motors can outshout me and outspend me and you and everybody else every day of the week.
Right. You know, and of course, the argument was made that what is the difference between unions and corporations on spending on elections? In other words, weren't unions allowed to raise money from their people? And wasn't this leveling the playing field? Wasn't that a little hypocritical on this and from their perspective?
Of course it was, because although unions can raise money from their members, but the question of how they spend the money. But look, it's not really the unions that are the problem. I mean, the unions are lumped together with corporations, but it's the corporations. I mean, unions are made up of people, obviously, who are in the same line of work, but may reflect a wide and disparate points of view. Corporations, on the other hand, have one purpose and one purpose only. Every corporation has a single purpose, and that is to make as much money as possible for their shareholders.
Right, and they can use the profits of this to wherein the unions, in their political action forum, right or wrong, have a political perspective.
Keep in mind, Richard, I mean, there are corporations now in this country that are controlled by foreign interests.
Right. Multinationals.
Toyota USA, Nissan USA. I could go on and on. There's BP. BP, there's a perfect example of a corporation. It's controlled by it's a British corporation, but they have a major presence in this country. And now they are entitled, because of Citizens United, they are entitled to spend unlimited amounts of money in support of candidates who they want to see elected.
And
2 years ago, there was a case before the Supreme Court in which, as a matter of fact, it found its way into a plot of a John Grisham book, but it's a real case where a coal company in West Virginia was not happy with a decision that went against it and could have cost it hundreds of millions of dollars. So they set about to fund the candidacy of an individual to become a member of the West Virginia Supreme Court.
Right.
And they spent a huge amount, tens of millions of dollars. And in West Virginia, I mean, in any place, that's a lot of money. But in West Virginia, it's unheard of in an election. And they got this person elected to the Supreme Court. And sure enough, the coal company's case came before the Supreme Court. And what do you think happened? The case was decided in favor of the coal company, And guess who cast the deciding vote?
Their judge.
The judge who they spent tens of millions of dollars to have elected.
You know, and here's a point, Michael, of course, in the last minute or so before a break, and I'm speaking to Michael Shapiro. We're talking about the conservative right movement of the court, call it from the New Deal possibly to the Raw Deal. There have been many complaints over the years that big money not only dominates but distorts politics. We've seen incredible amounts raised in the last election cycle. Senatorial races have cost tens of millions of dollars. Mayor Bloomberg spent $109 million in the past New York City mayoral race and barely beat his virtually unknown opponent, Bill Thompson. Is this an emphasis on money, fundraising, the power of lobbyists, and the buying of votes? Is this dangerous to our democracy?
I think it is. Of course, in Mayor Bloomberg's case, it's a little different because it was his own money.
Correct. And the so courts have ruled that
he's an individual who happens to have a lot of money. I guess if Bill Gates decided to run for office, he could spend an awful lot of money to get himself elected. But to have corporations have the unfettered ability to elect and back whoever they want and spend unlimited amounts of money to do it, I think is a gross distortion of the process and is terribly undermining of democracy.
And of course, as an adjunct to that, everyone complains that our representatives are spending all their time raising money. So if they're spending all their time raising their money, how much time do they have for the people's business?
Well, that's why the polls show that the Congress is held in very low esteem, and the general complaint is that they don't do anything.
Right. You know, we're coming up against our commercial break. I want to remind our audience that they are listening to The Advocates on WVOX 1460 AM, live streaming on WVOX.com with Richard Garfunkel. My guest is lawyer Michael Shapiro. We're talking about the current Supreme Court and its move to the far right. When we come back, I'm going to ask Michael the following question. There was another major case this year, that of McDonald versus Chicago, the Second Amendment gun case. What was the significance of that case? We'll be back in a moment or so. Thank you.
Helping you keep your cool all summer long. AM 1460 WVOX.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lillian Wu. The president praises BP's reported breakthrough in fighting the Gulf oil spill with a so-called static kill.
We are very pleased with that.
The next step, they're aiming for a permanent solution with relief wells. According to federal government scientists' findings, there's something missing in the Gulf, which is a good thing.
The administration today announcing that about three-quarters of the estimated 5 million barrels of oil that were released are now vanished, evaporated, dispersed, or otherwise collected.
What we can say to the people of the Gulf is that they will see less and less oil coming ashore. They're already seeing less.
White House Energy Advisor Carol Browner says the quarter of the oil that is left is not likely to cause major new problems.
Fox Radio's Mike Makowitz. In a bill to help states and local school boards with severe budget problems advancing, clearing a key vote in the Senate, the jobs bill would extend programs enacted in last year's stimulus law. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Securing America. Radical American-born cleric Anwar al-Awlaki, whose name keeps coming up in terror investigations, is now getting support in the U.S. from human rights activists. The ACLU and Center for Constitutional Rights filing a lawsuit over the special government license they would need to represent al-Awlaki's father. He wants to challenge the government's branding of his son as a designated global terrorist. It's that designation that brings the special licensing into play.
This president will take the steps necessary to keep our country safe from thugs like him.
And White House spokesman Robert Gibbs says the president understands the process. Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
New Jersey blueberries. They're fresh, great to eat, and they're here. Blueberries are a great source of vitamin A and C, and they're just 41 calories for a half cup serving. Besides all that, blueberries are delicious, and New Jersey blueberries are simply the best. New Jersey blueberries are juicy and sweet, great in pies, muffins, pancakes, yogurt, ice cream, or just by themselves. Let your imagination decide how to enjoy New Jersey blueberries. Remember, Jersey Fresh blueberries only come around once a year, and they don't last very long. So buy them and enjoy them now. You can even freeze them and enjoy them later. Go to your favorite supermarket and get some Jersey Fresh blueberries. It's a summer fruit treat that doesn't last very long, but they're so good. New Jersey blueberries, sweet, juicy, and delicious. Enjoy them now while they last. Courtesy of the New Jersey Blueberry Grower.
Ron, that completes your orientation at Sagona Industries. Just one thing, though. Sneakers are not office attire.
Quite the contrary, Joan. The right footwear is essential to my job. I'll be running to the fax machine, leaping to the printer, racing to the scanner, cornering at high speed to beat my office mates to the copier.
Ron, we have a Canon Image Runner 400. You won't need to leave your desk. You'll use the network to manage copying, printing, faxing, scanning, and sophisticated document finishing at up to 40 pages per minute.
But I do very thick reports.
Right.
Won't I need adequate ankle support to work the really big industrial-sized stapler?
No.
Dashing to the bindery for saddle-stitched booklets?
Ron, our Canon Image Runner 400 makes all the saddle-stitched booklets you want.
Oh, then I have time to run for a cup of coffee.
Like the wind, Ron.
For more on the Canon Image Runner, call George and Bob Forstbauer's Vista Business Products at 914-347-7888 or visit us on the web at www.vistacanon.com.
Now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Forecast Westchester County in the vicinity for this afternoon. Cloudy skies will give way to partial sun, continued hot and humid. Slight chance of a thunderstorm as well. Highs will climb into the lower 90s. Partly cloudy, could be showers and thunderstorms tonight. Overnight lows falling into the lower 70s. Continued muggy, hot weather on Thursday. It should remain mostly cloudy. Some thunderstorms could produce heavy rainfall through the afternoon. Highs will climb into the lower 90s. Showers end Thursday night, mostly sunny on Friday afternoon. Highs upper 80s, sunny, a bit cooler, and less humid for the weekend. I'm Steve Pelletieri, Jr., reporting for WVOX WVIP Worldwide. 3, 2, 1.
1460 WVOX.
Back to the Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to the Advocates. I'm talking to lawyer and legal commentator Michael Shapiro. We've been talking about the rightward shift of the Supreme Court. Before the break, I asked Michael about the recent Second Amendment gun case, McDonald versus Chicago, which came 2 years after the similar Heller case that affected the District of Columbia. Michael, therefore, what is the significance of McDonald v. Chicago?
Well, let's go back 2 years to the Heller case, because that's really where you have to start. The Heller case involved a law passed by the District of Columbia that restricted the ownership of handguns. It was, as in many, many big cities, New York among them, the ability to own a handgun is severely restricted. You have to show a specialized need to have it. Individuals, backed by the NRA, of course, brought a lawsuit saying that the District of Columbia law was in violation of the Second Amendment to the Constitution. And the Supreme Court in Heller, for the first time ever, decided the meaning of the Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment is very short, and I'll read it. It says, "A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." That's the entire amendment. The Supreme Court decided that amendment, irrespective of the fact that it talks about a well-regulated militia, means that private ownership of guns for the purposes of self-defense as a general matter cannot be restricted. And they decided that, therefore, the law in Washington, D.C. Was in violation of the Second Amendment. Now, the case of that was decided this term, the McDonald case, involved a similar law in Chicago. But the question then becomes whether or not the Second Amendment to the Bill of Rights applies to the states. Applies? Does it restrict regulation of guns in states like Illinois, Chicago, as it does in Washington, D.C.? And the reason that question arises is because, as a general matter, the Bill of Rights, which was enacted right after the Constitution was ratified, apply only to the federal government. Each state has their own constitution, and most states have their own bills of rights. The question has always been what parts of the Bill of Rights, if any, apply to restrict what the states can do. And it became a major issue after the passage of the 14th Amendment right after the Civil War, because the 14th Amendment places restrictions on the states in terms of their ability to limit the right of due process of people in the various states. And since the passage of the 14th Amendment, there has been what has been termed the incorporation doctrine, which is that on a piecemeal basis, parts of the Bill of Rights have been decided by the Supreme Court to apply to the states. But they've never said, and to this day they've never said, that the entire Bill of Rights applied to the states. Let me give you an example. The Fifth Amendment, everyone knows about the Fifth Amendment. That's the one that says that you have a right not to incriminate yourself. But it also says in the first sentence that no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime, that means a felony, unless upon a presentment or indictment of a grand jury. So what that says is that under federal law, you can't be charged with a felony unless you're indicted by a grand jury. In some states, you can be charged with a felony other than by a grand jury. The prosecutor can just charge you with a felony, and the Supreme Court has said that's okay. It's not a fundamental right. If the states want to charge you with a felony other than by an indictment from a grand jury, that's okay. So that's an example of a part of the Bill of Rights that has not been held to apply to the states. So the question in the McDonald case is whether or not the Second Amendment applies to the states. And the determination of what applies and what doesn't apply is generally the standard that's used is a standard that comes from a case in 1937 in which it was decided that those parts of the Bill of Rights that are fundamental to a concept of ordered liberty are incorporated by the 14th Amendment and apply to the states. So things like free speech, freedom of religion, a right to a jury trial, a right to have a lawyer if you're charged with a crime. Those are all rights that are considered to be fundamental to our concept of what liberty in this country is about.
So are you saying that this ruling could threaten the 1937 ruling?
Well, what I'm saying is that in the McDonald case, the Supreme Court found that the Second Amendment applies to the states, that just like the District of Columbia can't pass a law restricting the ownership of handguns in one's home for purposes of self-defense, neither can any of the states. And by doing so, by incorporating that part of the Bill of Rights as applying to the states, they have in essence found that gun ownership is fundamental to a concept of ordered liberty. They've placed the right to own and possess a gun on the same footing as the right of free speech.
I think
that's crazy.
Yeah, I tend to agree. We have one call. Quick, caller, give us your impression. So we have one question for Michael before the break. Go ahead.
Well, 120 seconds I don't think is going to do for what I have to say. But in any event, maybe you'll let me hang on and broach this question, considering he just got through discussing it. I want to go back to the other issue of the best government money can buy, which is unique to the United States, and the Supreme Court did this corrupt business here of siding with corporations and characterizing them as people. The Europeans don't do this, and they have public financing. That's going to be the only cure for this. Isn't it true, to get political about this, because that's where laws come from, is politics and politicians, that the party that has refused to go along with public financing in the most vigorous, outspoken way is the Republican Party?
Let Michael answer that, and because we're running down on time, Mr. Cass.
Right, yes, obviously, that's true, and the reason should be equally obvious. The Republicans from the time of Roosevelt up until the present time are looking out for the interests of big business and big corporations.
Well, thank you very much for that.
You know, one quick case before the break. We only have a minute or so. You know, after the departure of Sandra Day O'Connor and the appointment and confirmation of Judge Justice Samuel Alito, the case of Hudson versus Michigan regarding Fourth Amendment rights regarding search and seizure was decided 5-4. What's quickly, or Michael, what's the consequence of that ruling on search and seizure? We only have a few seconds.
The consequence of that ruling is to whittle away at our rights under the Fourth Amendment to be secure in our homes against unreasonable searches and seizures. Basically, up until that case, it was the law for years and years and years that before the police could enter your home pursuant to a search warrant, they had to knock and announce their purpose. And that was the position of Justice O'Connor, who herself was not a liberal justice. She was,
right.
She was quite conservative.
Right.
But she pales, her conservatism pales in comparison to that of Justice Alito.
Thank you, Michael. We have to go to a commercial break. I just want to remind our audience who are listening to WVOX 1460 AM live streaming on WVOX.com with my guest, Michael Shapiro. We're talking about the rightward movement in the Supreme Court. Now
we have ways of making you talk.
Well, okay, hotshot.
WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. The president praising BP's reported breakthrough in fighting the Gulf oil spill with a so-called static kill.
We are very pleased with that.
The next step, they're aiming for a permanent solution with relief wells. According to federal government scientists' findings, there's something missing in the Gulf, which is a good thing.
The administration today announcing that about 3/4 of the estimated 5 million barrels of oil that were released are now vanished, evaporated, dispersed, or otherwise collected.
What we can say to the people of the Gulf is that they will see less and less oil coming ashore. They're already seeing less.
White House Energy Advisor Carol Browner says the quarter of the oil that is left is not likely to cause major new problems.
Fox Radio's Mike Makowicz in Washington, and a bill to help state and local school boards with severe budget problems advancing, clearing a key vote in the Senate. The jobs bill would extend programs enacted in last year's stimulus law. Fox News, we report. You decide.
Did you know that women are 5 times more likely to die of heart disease than breast cancer, making it the number one killer of women in the U.S.? This alarming statistic means it's time to assess your risk factors and make lifestyle changes for your heart's sake as well as those you love. Soundshore Medical Center encourages you to take the steps for improved heart health. Stop smoking, get physically active, and control your weight, cholesterol, blood pressure, and diabetes. Your heart health is in your hands.
There are quite a number of neighborhood flower shops around Westchester County these days. As in all things, some are better than others. And in the Colonial Village Shopping Center on Weaver Street in Scarsdale, just to the north of New Rochelle, there exists a florist of very great style and renown. Colonial Village Flowers specializes in beautiful seasonal flowers arranged in good taste, with the lovely low-key result that all Colonial Village presentations, bouquets, and arrangements look like they were actually grown, collected, and gathered in the natural setting of your own garden. Good taste in flowers has for years been a special trademark of Joe Ward and his talented floral arrangers at Colonial Village. featuring the natural look without pomp or ceremony. So please know that there is at least one flower shop on your classy wavelength. Joe Ward's Colonial Village Flowers at 1515 Weaver Street in Scarsdale. Call 723-2888. That's 723-2 3/8.
From big band jazz to classical masterpieces and today's hits, there are hundreds of free concerts happening all across Westchester this summer. To help you find out about all these great concerts, Arts Westchester has compiled a terrific online guide called Music in the Air. There's something to suit everyone's musical taste. To search the Music in the Air guide, just visit www.artswestchester.org. That's www.artswestchester.org.
Every day for you and yours, 1460 WVOX.
Now, back to the Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to the Advocates with lawyer and legal commentator Michael Shapiro. We've been talking about the Supreme Court this afternoon. Recently, the John Roberts Court has finished its fifth term last week on July 25th. In fact, I have the newspaper opened right in front of me. The New York Times has devoted its front page story on the court with a headline, "The Most Conservative Court in Decades." Michael, we have discussed the court's rulings with regards to Citizens United about campaign fundraising, McDonald versus Chicago about gun control. Speaking of that, there was another mass killing in Connecticut. The gun advocates, the NRA, said, well, if everybody had guns, this wouldn't happen. No, I think you'd have Dodge City or Tombstone every day. And in fact, in those cities, all the guns were registered, believe it or not, pretty quickly with the sheriff before people could enter town. So they had gun control laws even in the Wild Wild West. We have Hudson versus Michigan about Fourth Amendment protection. That seems to be on the decline. What can we look forward to? We have a call that we'll go to after this question, but what can we look forward to with this court, and will the elevation of Elena Kagan make any difference?
Well, Richard, what we've been talking about really, especially in Citizens United and then in Michigan against Hudson, is just the opposite of the conservative umpire balls and strikes kind of court. We've been talking about an activist court that goes out of its way to remake the law as they see fit, as the conservatives see fit. They're not happy with the way the law was. They're not happy with McCain-Feingold. They're not happy with restrictions on corporate spending in elections. They're not happy with a Supreme Court case in 1995, just merely a 10 years before the Hudson case, that said unanimously that the Fourth Amendment requires law enforcement officers to knock and announce their presence before entering a dwelling. So they weren't happy with that decision. So what did they do in Hudson against Michigan? The five conservatives said, well, we're going to change the law. We're going to change the law to what we want it to be. We're going to change McCain-Feingold to what we want it to be. They are that is the activist court, and that was the activist court of the 1930s, that they weren't happy with the New Deal. So we're going to strike down the New Deal. We don't care that the people's representatives have enacted these laws. We're going to do what we want to do. We're going to make the law what we think it should be. Despite the fact that we're not elected, we're appointed, there are only 9 of us, 5 of us get to decide what we want to decide. It is activism in its most rampant form, and that's what we're seeing. Despite their professions of being, we're conservative, we just interpret the law. Don't believe it for a minute. Elena Kagan, she's going to be a justice today, tomorrow, or the day after, and she's going to be replacing Justice Stevens, the most liberal justice on the court today, but far from the most liberal of all time. I mean, that probably would go to Thurgood Marshall, but she's not going to change the makeup of the court. It's going to be for ultra-conservatives, for middle-of-the-road to somewhat moderate judges, and then Justice Kennedy in the middle, as he has been for quite some time since Justice O'Connor left. Justice Kennedy is going to remain as the swing vote. But there are many, many times that he sides with the conservative majority to change the law, to make the law as he thinks it should be, as we saw in the year 2000 when the Supreme Court got to elect the president of the United States in Bush v. Gore.
Right, and he is much more conservative than the Four Horsemen, much more.
Yes, yes,
and no question. He's in one of the top 10 most conservative justices that have been appointed in the last 80 years, and he is the swing vote, theoretically.
That's correct. Although, you know, in certain areas, he seems to in death penalty cases. In the case from last term, when the Supreme Court ruled that juveniles could not be sentenced to life without parole, he has voted with the more liberal members.
Right.
So in certain areas, and he's also one of the judges who has been willing to look at and consider foreign sources of law in interpreting our laws and to give gloss to our Constitution, which drives some members of the court, the Alitos and Scalias and Thomases up the wall. They are completely parochial and believe that the United States is an island unto itself and that there can be no knowledge gleaned from the legal systems of any other country.
You know, we have a caller. Go ahead, please, caller, and state your question.
Yeah, hi. This is Bill in New Rochelle. Richard and Michael, I'm really enjoying the discussion, and I do believe that this court are not happy activists, as Michael put it. And I think they're creating a lot of new problems with these rulings. For example, two things. The corporations versus individuals, where basically they're giving corporations the same rights as individuals have, they're not giving them the responsibilities. I'm an individual. I have a different body of tax law than an individual, than a corporation does. I have different responsibilities, but they have the same rights. And another example, you were just talking about the Second Amendment. They're creating these militias, but they're not well-regulated. They're allowing these militias to continue to be armed and citizens, but they're not well-regulated. They're private armies. Timothy McVeigh belonged to one.
Mm. Who
was regulating that?
Another example.
Yeah. And Colin Ferguson, that fellow that killed all those people out in Long Island on a train, he got his guns because he just went in and bought them somewhere in Virginia, I think, or Florida. And
sure.
There's, like, no regulation.
Well, will they allow a person to own a howitzer? Will they allow a person to own a submachine gun, which were banned in the 1930s because it was the mobs that had them, the Dillinger and the Pretty Boy Floyd mobs who were outgunning the local officials? Is this what the next ruling will be?
Or a battle tank. You're right. There's no end to it. I'll just drop off and let you guys talk about it.
Thank you, Bill, for the question.
Every person understands that the populations over the last 100 years has become much more urban. We're living in cities. We're living in close proximity to each other. Places like New York, Chicago, Houston, Los Angeles, Atlanta. If everyone who wants to simply have a gun is permitted to go out and buy it, as you say, Richard, it's going to be the Wild West, but it's going to be worse than the Wild West.
Right.
And you know what? In New York, we have New York City. We have 30,000-35,000 police officers, all of them armed, all of them sworn to uphold the law, and all of them who believe their job is to protect us. If we can't rely on them, then we really do have a problem. Understand something. The Supreme Court, the five conservatives on the Supreme Court, the NRA is a perfect example of why money in the political process corrupts. The NRA is among the largest spenders in this country to get its agenda across.
Right.
And now with the Citizens United decision, it's only going to become worse. We're going to have Big Pharma spending inordinate amounts of money to get drugs onto the market without sufficient testing, so that we're going to run the risk of reenactment of the thalidomide horrors of 40 years ago.
You know, Michael, we only have a couple of minutes. I want to get a couple of quick questions into you, quick answers to, if you can. You know, the right of choice, and or in plain language, the ability to get abortion in many states is quite difficult. Do you see the Supreme Court reviewing Roe v. Wade in the near future?
Yeah, if they have the opportunity, they will try. I don't believe that it's in imminent danger at this point. The judges there, but there are certainly a group of judges headed by the four, by Alito, Scalia, Thomas, and Roberts, that if given the opportunity, would ban abortion.
Yeah, you know.
And a woman's right to choose.
Yeah, you know. In closing, Michael, we only have a minute or so, and this is a coming up situation. I like a quick opinion on. You know, a lower court ruled against parts of the new Arizona law regarding illegal immigration and local law enforcement officials. I'm not going to ask you where you side on this. I have my own opinions. Could this case become a test case for the Supreme Court regarding federalism and states' rights?
It could be. It could be, and it'd be very interesting as to what they decide. But because, of course, the four conservatives claim to be in favor of states' rights. On the other hand, they also somewhat inconsistently tend to back the power of the government.
Right.
But I think they tend to back the federal government.
I got a break. I got to close, Michael. I want to thank you very much for coming on. If you want to hear this broadcast or any other archived Advocates broadcast, you can access them at my website, advocates-wvox, where information, my guests, will be posted next week. We'll be discussing the issue of small local stores versus big national box stores. Thank you, Michael, for coming on.
My pleasure, as always.
Thank you. Great. And we'll revisit this later. Bye-bye. Thank you very much.